Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. This is an excellent episode. We crack open a lot of stuff. When I say excellent, what I mean by that is new stuff, right? It's always going to be the same problems, just new information. That's my job, is to try to give you guys some new information, some new spin on things, and that's what this is. This is an excellent podcast with an individual actually living in Australia. He's coming to my seminar next month in November, which I'm excited about, and he's dealing with two dogs that are going after each other. But I know I just released a podcast, and I've done it before, and like, okay, two dogs go after each other, but this is different. This cracks open why they went after each other in first place, what is realistic. We go over dog training terms, some of the BS politics, and there's a lot more to it. This is a really good, refreshing podcast. Take a deep breath and enjoy the podcast. And remember, I'll be in Australia next month. I'm going to be in Brisbane myself on my birthday doing a seminar. A working spot sold out immediately, but audit spots are still available to come and watch. Again, it's going to be my birthday. I'm really excited. It's just going to be me. Forrest, Mickey, and I are going to be in Melbourne and in Central Coast area. There might be working spots left. Definitely audit spots if you guys want to come hang out. It's going to be a beautiful, magical, life-changing weekend. Both of them. So excited to get over there. And if you guys have questions for me, I would love to answer them. And all you guys have to do is head over to the iTunes review chart, leave your review and your question in the review, and at the end, I'll answer them. Thank you guys so much. No Bad Dog Army. Love you guys. Talk to you at the end. Really quick, guys, I wanted to let you know that I just put out my brand new reactive to neutral course. Every piece of information I've ever thought about, talked about, or anything that's been helpful to all my clients over the decade or more, I put into this course. It's inexpensive. It's about $175 USD, and it goes over everything I could possibly think of. Every question I've gotten, every solution that's been successful is in this course. So if you guys want to save time and money on learning about dog reactivity, it goes over the difference between reactivity and aggression. It goes over what potential tools you may need, what they can do, what they can't do. It goes over what to do if your dog doesn't like dogs, what to do if your dog doesn't like people. It's everything in a very, very digestible course. The link is in the description below, of course.
Yes. I guess I'm in a bit of a pickle in that, you know, I've had a very, I've got two rescues. Zella, who's a cross American Staffy and cross Bullarab. Don't know if you know much about Bullarabs.
I don't.
They're not really in the US. Pig hunting breed. Jax, so that's Zella. She's fixed, about 2.5 years old. And then there's Jax, who's a cross Mastiff cross British Staffy. Fixed male, and he's about three. And I've had him since had him for about 2 years now, around the same time. So Jax, when I got him, had a bite history. I took him on knowing that, like, he's unconfident, working on confidence. So I've been working with a really awesome balanced trainer. We've helped him so much, haven't had any issues with him. But in the meantime, I'm focusing on him. I sort of neglected Zella's issues, and things have escalated. Zella was always a bit of a bully. And it's got to the point now where they had scuffs and made up real quick. Back in June, they had a big one, and they've been separated ever since. They're literally, so it's crate and rotate, inside, outside. Even if they're within 2 seconds, they like Zeller wants to go him. So, in those situations, he's incredibly scared of her. So that's potentially, this is the main issue of how I'm dealing. You know, the main thing is sort of corrections of, like, I'm managing it. I don't want to force, I tried to force them with the trainer to go reintroduction. It just didn't work. It was too traumatic for Jax. I have accepted that they might be separated forever. I can accept that. I can deal with that. But the main thing is trying to, I don't know how to correct Zeller from like death stares at him or lunging at the window at him, particularly when she's the other side of the window and I'm on the same side as him, you know, like how do I go about correcting him, you know, just to be fair to him. You know, I don't want him, like, he was unconfident as he is. I spent ages building his confidence up. I don't want it to regress. And then as well, perhaps come later, with Zeller as well, is I've been having, particularly recently, but also early on when I first got her, but it stopped. But in this new place, she's been escaping despite being Fort Knox now. And I'm having problems with the city. I'm having problems with the neighbor. It's even when I'm home, like, so it's not just that she's bored or anything like that. You know, she wants to go explore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how to the barrier, like just creating a barrier is not working, but how to sort of perhaps, you know, make it forget about going, or whether, like, I did use a, at the previous place, I did have a invisible fence as a last resort, and it worked, and then she forgot about it, and I didn't really have to do it until, you know, for another 6 months till she remembered, then just put it on for 2 days and then she'd forget about wanting to go, and then another, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. All right. Let's talk about the dogs interacting with each other now. So, your other dogs, so there's Jax and Zella, or is it Zello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I would say with the two dogs that are interacting and trying to, or at least Zella's trying to attack Jax, once they do have this big blowout, then their relationship changes forever. And that's the same thing with humans too. It doesn't matter. Humans.
Yeah, I've heard you say that a lot on your podcast. Yeah. And, you know, I've kind of accepted that. Now, like, people are like, oh, it'll be, you know, don't worry, they'll be friends again. And I'm like, no, that's let me be selfish too. Like, if, you know, they might never be friends. They may be, but I can't expect that they will be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's a good expectation to have, because if it does happen, great. But if it doesn't, you're not going to be disappointed. You know, you're like, okay, I didn't think this was going to happen anyway. But one thing that I would try to do if you haven't already, and if you have, okay, but if you haven't, dogs who don't like each other, or dogs who liked each other and then got into a fight and now don't like each other, typically it can be, I shouldn't say typically, I would say sometimes it can be a situation of environments too. So especially if they're in the tight area, meaning if you bring them out in other contexts, in other environments, then you might have better opportunity to have them coexist with each other. So let's say you're in your house, and obviously if they're seeing each other, they're going to be upset, or at least they're going to respond to that. So Jax may be nervous, Zello may be hunting him or staring at him maliciously, and they don't really have any other options, so they're kind of just locked in on each other. There's not much else to do in the house. You know, you got two dogs and you, and you know, everything else that goes on is not helpful for them as far as distracting them or breaking the ice. Especially if one's crated and one's out, it kind of builds that tension, and it can build the build the animosity or the tension between them. And so sometimes if you bring them out of their environment, you can get them to be dogs and sniff and smell and go for walks, but not sit there and look at each other the whole time. I think the only way realistically to make that successful and very minimal amount of stress is if you did it with somebody else, obviously. Hold one, you know, they're both probably strong dogs.
Yeah, we did that. So with the trainer, we muzzled them both up and took them for a walk together. But it was pretty traumatic for Jax and Zella. The trainer had Zella, and he was having to correct her when she was started to, you know, make moves towards him in a not so, you know, legitimate, you know.
Yeah, I understand. I would make it more about the walk than I would about them trying to be social with each other. So I wouldn't need a reason for muzzles. I would just say, you're going to take one, I'm going to take one, we're going to keep our distance, we're going to go for a walk with each other. But if you're close enough, well, A, if they have muzzles, it sets them. I mean, muzzles are great. I don't want to say if you feel uncomfortable that Jax may get away, obviously, then yeah, use a muzzle. But I'm just saying, under the circumstances and context of me wanting there to be like a neutral situation where, hey, we're just going to go for a walk. We're not training them. We're not having them introduce each other. We're not trying to have them smell each other close. We're just going for a walk, and they're just going to be, you know, it's like, you know, people is the same way. It's like, okay, you don't like each other. You don't like each other, but guess what? We're going to go for a walk, you know, with one another. That doesn't mean you have to be in boxing gloves. That just means, hey, we can be civil here. So that's what I was getting to is my point is, if you have the intentions of trying to get them close enough to see what's going to happen, then the muzzles and the tension and the stress is going to be double what it should be. I think what you should do is have one, have the other, go for a walk. One's on the left side of one person, one's on the right side of the other person, and you guys are just walking. And at no point would they be nose to nose or even letting them have an opportunity to sniff each other. Or
yeah,
they're going to sniff each other, smell each other, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
close up, yeah.
Yeah, definitely not. Just my, I guess, you know, like I'm saying is, if you do come into a situation where they're not going to be friends again, or at least civil with each other, because Jax just, you know, has it out for Zella, or sorry, vice versa. Then what you would do is you would just say, okay, what things can I do with them together that is reasonable, responsible? And those are the things I would be focusing on is what is it worth to you? If you have friend, family, partner, anybody that can, you know, Saturday, Sunday morning say, hey, let's bring the dogs for a walk, whatever, bring the dogs for a walk at night. That's what I would be doing, is having them out with each other neutrally, but not anywhere near each other where you would have to ever worry.
Yeah. I certainly was worrying, like, even, you know, even with the muzzled, I was scared, you know, I don't know. So, I know that they were picking up on my.
Yeah, it's hard.
On my fear, you know?
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, that's what I mean is, it's tough, and sometimes it's better to just not try it. You know, I'm just saying, again, it sounds like you've already done training. You have heard me talk about this several times, it sounds like, with other people, and just once, and the dogs are telling you too, like, it's very clear, okay, you know, Zella's really trying to get after Jax in a bad way every time, so that's not gonna decrease, probably. It's just a thing where it's now, it's like a game where that's what's trying to happen. So then you say, okay, what do I do? They're not gonna like each other, at least anytime soon. So I think the crate and rotate that you've been doing is great. I think that that's the best route that you could go. And then again, outside of that, in your head, think about things that you could do with somebody else that will where you can go out and enjoy both of your dogs at the same time and have some sort of normalcy. Those are the things you should be working on. Now, as far as corrections go, like, how are you, are they, is one in a crate and one out, like in a traditional crate and rotate?
Yeah, usually inside outside, but she will always, if I'm not home, she has to go. If she's inside, has to go in the crate because she's a bit destructive in general. Mm-hmm. Him can be he's fine. He can be anywhere. Or I rarely have them both inside at the same time, even if one's in the crate. Mm-hmm. I can feel the tension, and she has been known to force herself out of the crate too. So
it's dangerous a little bit.
And also there's the added thing that there's a cat as well that they don't get along with as well. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got a little, love triangle going on.
Yeah. It's a lot, you know, I know a lot of people would have given up by now. And I'm not going, I do have backup plans but it's, you know, I'm managing it. So I don't think I need to, it's just, I want to give them both the best.
Yep.
Best quality of life I can give them, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And I think you go down two paths again, you modify it or change it if you can. And if you can't, then you manage it. And those are the only options anybody really has for behavioral work. Mm-hmm. Either desensitize, build confidence, modify, change, correct, all that stuff to try to change the outcome of how the dogs emotionally feel. But at the end of the day, if that's not going to change because of their personality that has now become because of their history, then the only option you could do is manage it. And so the management also comes down to how much room you have too, like in your house, because everyone's home is different. So if you have a one bedroom, 400 square foot home, you have very limited amounts of things that you can trial and do. But if you have a bigger home, and it doesn't matter, like, I don't need to know those specifics. I'm just saying those are the next steps that's why I got into, okay, well, if the case is she's not going to like him or he's not going to like her, however it goes, then that's where you would just try to think about all the things that you can do, that you can do, and just keep being responsible for the things you can't do.
I actually moved house for this situation to be able to manage in a place that actually I can manage the situation much easier than my old place. Mm. I had only one entrance into the yard previously. So like if you're going, you know, it was very hard to keep it, you know, but now I can literally one goes in, you know, into a laundry area, get the other one inside, take the other one out. They don't see each other as they, you know.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's all you can really do. And like I said, I think having one outside and one inside is a great, easy thing because the other one, they both kind of have their freedoms. And it's like anything else. Like, hey, this is your area that you have to stay in to keep you safe. And to keep everyone else safe, you know, and I think that that's the route to go. You just say, hey, you're over here and you're over here. But again, it's hard to say from a training standpoint how you would. So I think you're already past, can they get better or will it change? It sounds to me you're already past that. You've already gone through the processes to try to figure out if that's an option, and that doesn't sound like it's on the table. So my job now is like to agree to the things that you're doing, and I think that they're good. The only thing I would be adding in is, and this is discretionary on how comfortable you are, but, and again, the risk over reward, if you will, where we don't want Jax to, like, my point is let's say, okay, if I have really good obedience with both dogs, I can have them coexist. I can do some training with one another around, things like that, you know, hey, Jax down, stay, heel, and then same thing. You could take Jax, put him into a place, and then heal Zella, and then put Zella on a place, heal Jax, and blah, blah, blah. But if Jax is sitting there shaking in his boots the whole time because he thinks that she's going to pounce on him, and if you're nervous also doing it, then that's not worth it for anybody. So a lot of the exercises and desensitization exercises that you can do are also, again, pretty predicated off of the risk over reward or vice versa. How much stress is it going to cause you and Jax to do those? And if it's not worth it, then don't. So I think the easiest thing to do is to just get somebody else. Like, again, like, even if you have if you still have a good relationship with your trainer, which you haven't told me anything otherwise, I'm not implying that.
He's absolutely awesome. He's the one who told me to come to your seminar. He's attending himself. So cool.
Great. Yeah. I was just going to say, like, if you can tell him, like, hey, I think what we should, like, again, you just have to, it's really discretionary, because at the end of the day, it sounds like Jax is always going to be afraid of the potential risk of Zella getting to him. And it sounds like Zella just is locked in on him, and that's not going to change. So that's the common denominator here, but it's really up to you on what other things, if you want to, what things you want to do and things that you're comfortable doing. Because again, if you're just saying like, hey, I'm content with doing what I'm doing. They're both happy individually. It's a lot of work. It would be a lot better if I could just let them be with each other, but I can't. Then yeah, you're doing everything right. Everything's kind of, you know, laid out for you. But if you did want to do other things, that's what I would be doing, is just going out for walks with not the intentions of having them get better, but you being able to be out with your dogs at the same time again. That's what you would do. So again, like, muzzles are good, but I was like, in my head, I would never think about putting a muzzle on, because we're not going to put them in that situation. They're going to be well, but you can go for a walk in the morning and blah, blah, blah. And then but I would say with that, there is an opportunity for, because right now, if you get out and Zella's locked in on Jax, and that's like where you're at now, that's just what happens every time. The more but you're also like, if you do try to get him out and that's what the game is about, like if you're like, hey, what are you going to do? Then that's what it's always going to become. But if you make it more about you, and you make it more about the walk, and you make it more about sniffing the ground and smelling stuff and looking at the birds and seeing the grass and whatever, like if you make it more about that, then before you know it, again, if you have somebody that can handle, like if I was with you and your dogs are friendly to people, I'd say, hey, man, I'll take Jax, you take Zella, let's go for a walk. Let's just go around your neighborhood and just go for a walk. Fine. Be like, oh, well, yeah. You know, but again, it depends on how comfortable you are doing that. And it also depends on what that does to Jax emotionally. So, you know what I mean? Like, you could do that, and then who knows? Things may get tolerable where you might be able to take one over here on a leash, take one over here on a leash and walk, and they could care less because they're so used to, because dogs get into this routine where right now, if I had a mouse on the other end of a fence and my cat just sat there, he's just going to sit there all day waiting for it. And every day he knows that that mouse is going to be there. He's conditioned, like, I go after the mouse because it's there. I go after the mouse because it's there. But if you don't take the cat and put them in a different environment, say, look, there's a rabbit. They go, oh, I'm going to go, you know. So what happens with sometimes with dogs are like really locked in is that's all they know. So Jax comes out, Zella comes out, and then there's a problem. But if you say, hey, we're
that
not.
Becomes like an habit more than yeah, anything
it,
else.
It could. It could. Yeah. And so what you do is say, we're not getting to each other. Like, Zella, you know, quit the shit. Nope. We're not correction. We're not doing that. Stop. Don't even have that in your head. We're going for a walk. And then she may go, yeah, but Jack, don't. Hey, what the hell? Come on. Jax is minding his own business. You mind your own business. Let's go for a walk. And that's the way to kind of have, again, your cake and eat it too there, where you can say, yeah, they may not. Because I do it all the time. I have a dog that doesn't like other dogs, and I have a dog that could care less about dogs, but we're on the same walk. And they're not interacting, and they're not close enough to interact, and we're good. But we don't have the intentions or the expectations that at the end of the walk, well, they've done so good separately, let's get them together. I just think you come back, you say, hey, I'm going to go pop one in the back, bring the other one in, nice walk, good. And then over time, I mean, it, if you're going to try to desensitize them being coexisting and mutual, not friendly, that's the way you would start. And I'm just saying, like, I don't know if that's even an option, but if it was an option, that's the only way you'd be able to start it.
And how about like the lunging at windows and that sort of thing? What's the best way to correct or to tell her that's not appropriate, you know?
Well, I think I mean, the answer is whatever works. I don't know what your training. I mean, at the end of the day, when you tell Zella to leave it, or like, let's say you're sitting down watching whatever, and she just starts lunging at the window, the amount of stress that she's causing herself to protect the house or bark at another dog is mindless. So your correction, what would you normally do? I mean, you tell me, like, what's your relationship with
I'm talking mainly at not so much about passing dogs or anything, talking specifically about Jax on the other side.
Okay.
And if I'm on the same side, I'll just, you know, I'll grab her and chuck her straight down into the bed and look, just physically no and mm-hmm. down.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm on the other side of the window with Jax or something, it doesn't do much. And, you know, her, like, to be frank, Jax's obedience is great. We've had, you know, he won. But this has been the struggle. And I know it's me. It's not anyone else's, but she is certainly, you know, she certainly thinks she's queen. You know, her obedience is pretty shit. No matter how, you know, and I'm, and that's, I guess, probably stems from, well, one, I had the focus on Jax with the bite history initially and kind of neglected her.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's all me. You know, it's all my fault that I've let her down, but I'm struggling. I don't know. I think it's a little bit too, like, I'm a bit, you know, I find it hard to put, like, my own personality wise to just, you know, to be that assertive that she needs. And, you know, but I don't, you know, it's a journey, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard, especially if you're doing it by yourself too. It's like parenting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if you have a partner and they're not on board, you're still by yourself.
Yeah.
So, I would just say, like, what I would do is you want to, so it's a good thing that you told me what you're doing, because you really want to have anytime you're correcting the dog, you really want them to mentally change their decision making. And sometimes they change their decision-making because it's in their best interest and they learn and they go, I don't want to do that. And sometimes they change their decision-making because they don't want to get punished, and that's sometimes what we do. It's humans go through that every single day of their lives. They're like, well, I could have one more cookie. Well, I'd feel like crap. Or I could go 20 miles per hour more of this speed. I could get in a car accident, or I could get pulled over, like every single day. So my point is when you're with either of the dogs, so let's say you're out with Zella and she's reacting towards Jax on the other side of the door. If you physically take her, pin her to the ground, or even push her away, or even drag her away, you're leaving the conversation open, and you don't want to do that because she's sitting there still pissed as you pull her, drag her, pin her, whatever. She's still pissed about the situation. So what I typically do, and what's been, this isn't my opinion, this has just been what's helpful to my clients a lot of times, is you correct the dog. So let's say you're standing at a door. Jax is on one side wanting to come into his home, and Zella's near there as well, and she wants to get him, and she's barking and growling at him. I would have a leash and a collar set up on, and I'd be correcting the dog. I'd be correcting Zella as she's barking, so she makes a better decision to stop barking, and she calms down. Because if you physically pull her away or anything else, you're just moving her to another location. Where I want her to disengage on her own accord, because we're teaching her that her behavior is wrong. And the way that we so like a correction is to teach. The only reason why corrections in life exist is to teach. That's it. So if you're constantly correcting, then you're not doing it right. But that's what you should do, is you're standing there. You got to correct your dog, Zella. Hey, leave it. Leave it. So you make her behavior uncomfortable. You make her decision-making and her reactivity stressful and uncomfortable. That's the point of a correction. That's the whole point. And the objective is once she does something right, or she disengages and she doesn't bark at her brother for the very first time, you then heavily pay her. And that's a very basic common sense roadmap that most people would have if they would move that over to, like, again, their kids or their employees, whatever. So that's what you should do, is just teach what's wrong.
Okay. So it's grab her collar. What, put it?
Yeah, you'd have it on.
Like prong collar or.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'd have a kind of a game plan. You wouldn't just sit there. I mean, I'll give it to you like this. Like, again, let's say you're at the door. It's see through. Jax is on one side. Zella's on the other side. Zella starts reacting at Jax, growling at Jax. I want to kill you for no reason. I don't like you. Okay, fine. You got to think about this is an interesting concept about behavior in general, is you have to think about the dog's point of view and perspective. One of your dogs is actively trying to hurt your other dog for no particular reason. It's out of context. It's not like anything happened. It's just like, I don't like you anymore. Okay. So you, as the handler, the owner, the person in charge, right? The person with thumbs, your job is to, obviously we that behavior is inappropriate. But the thing about behavior versus personality is there's some things you can change and some things you can't. So when your dog is actively trying to get to the other dog because she doesn't like him, you would just hope that all of a sudden one day she likes him again, because it would make everything so much better. But that's probably not going to happen, which we know. So her personality right now is like, I don't like you. Get out of here. I'm going to beat your ass, blah, blah, blah. And your objective is to step in and, again, correct your dog and advocate for the situation, because they're basically having a fist fight in front of dad, which is a blatant, like, screw you, you know, disrespect. So you correct the behavior, and then maybe you give her an alternative to do something else. Zella, go to your bed. So she goes to her bed. Okay. So you're at the door, leave it. Correction with the prong, the slip, the martingale, the e-call, whatever you do. But you have to remember that when you're correcting a dog, you have to break their mental state of mind at that moment. Sometimes it's stressful for them. Sometimes it just snaps them out of it. Sometimes it just gets their attention. Sometimes it's all of the above. But the idea is to snap them out of the behavior that they're in. And some dogs are more sensitive than others. Some dogs will go, okay, all right, my bad. Some dogs will go, holy crap, why'd you do that? And some dogs will just be like, don't touch me. I'm busy trying to kill something, right? So when you correct her, you want her to stop what she's doing, okay? She might snap out of it and go, Dad, what the hell? What was that? What'd I do? What? I didn't, you know? And then you would say, Zella, go to your bed, which is 10 feet over here in this other room. And you bring her to her bed, downstay. Good bed, good stay, good girl, nice job. Boom, you pay her. Jax is still on the other side of the door. Okay, Zella, break. Zella gets off her break, wanders over to the door. Maybe she starts, and this is typically how corrections, in my experience, have worked. Is once you correct the first time, you say, hey, that's inappropriate, don't do that, stop. I'm correcting you. That's by definition, that's what we're doing. I'm teaching you that right there is not appropriate behavior. You're trying to kill your brother for no reason and not on my terms, not on my watch, okay? So I'm correcting you because I want you to make a better decision. So a lot of times when you correct the first time, the second time, the behavior is much less because they're like, okay, well, before all of this barking and reactivity and aggression got me in trouble, but I'm still going to come over here and let my buddy Jax know I don't want him in here and I want him out of here. I'm going to give him the teeth or the growling. So then you correct again, and then you move the dog away, and then you come back. And then maybe the third time she doesn't growl. She doesn't look at him. She doesn't care. You say, yes, good job. Good, leave it. Good job. Now, again, like...
So the positive after.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're trying to teach her this is how we do it. But you got to understand that with some dogs, personality is going to require suppression. Because, and by definition, and this is a very like taboo word in the dog training industry for whatever reason, I think there's just some people who exploited the word or made it their vocabulary, but for whatever reason, but compulsion by definition is telling an animal or not letting an animal do what they naturally want to do. So if you put a dog on a leash and they want to run and chase the squirrel and you don't let them, it's compulsion. You're saying, no, you can't, against their will, period. That's all it is. But really what a better word for it is suppression. You're taking a behavior. The dog still wants to do the behavior, but you're saying you can't, right? So there is, but that's all you can do when you're dealing with a personality, right? When a dog's like, I don't like this dog. You're like, okay, fine. You know what, bud? You don't have to like this dog, but you are not going to come into my house and act like that. You don't have to like him, but you're not going to bark at him. You're not going to growl at him. You're not going to try to kill him. Not while I'm here, okay? You know, if you make a mistake and you leave them together or one of them gets out or whatever, that's on you, because she's never going to not want to go after him, right? I think that's the accumulation of the information that we're talking about. So you're going to use a correction to say, you know what, fine, you don't have to like him, but you are not going to sit in my house, at my door, and show your teeth and growl and bark and snarl and try to kill my other dog. That's not going to happen. So you're correcting that behavior and you're telling her how, so you can't control her personality, but you can control her behavior. And I'm not naive. All I've done my whole life as an expert is study dog behavior. And I know what suppression can do. But at the same time, if we can't change the dog's behavior, we have to do that. Or we just say, hey, get rid of a dog. Okay, there, you've eliminated it. But for me, those are the types of things I would be doing, right? Your dog wants to go. I did it this morning, okay? I used compulsion this morning for a perfect example. I was walking down my road. My dog, Lakota, is always, I shouldn't say that, she's off leash often. I live in a quiet neighborhood in the suburbs, and I have control over my dog, okay? So I'm out for a walk with her, with my nanny and our son and my wife, and we're all just kind of talking in the morning. And I always carry an extra leash because of off-leash dogs. Because I know that I can just tell my dog to downstay in the circus and she's going to stay there no matter what clowns are around. Because then
don't get me started.
Right. Yeah. It's.
I just talked someone off the other day for their off-leash dog in the park, and they had headphones on, no idea that their dog was going, and Jax was freaking out.
Yeah, it happens. And so what I'm saying is I have a ball with her, right? So she'll either have a tug in her mouth or she'll have a chuck. She's not a pet. She doesn't want to go for a walk with me and my family. She wants to just play. But if I'm going for a walk, I'm like, oh, come on, Coda, let's go. Come on. She's like, oh, fine, I'll go. So I kick the ball for her around the neighborhood as she's walking with us, and she likes that. So I kick the ball. I look to my left. I hear one of my neighbors down the road say, hey, to her dog, and I see the dog running towards us. So I stopped my dog from getting her ball because she wanted to go get it, which was towards the other dog, and I put her into a down and a stay. So I used compulsion. Yep. She's like, yeah, but the ball. And I said, you're running. You don't even realize that you're running head on with a dog that's off leash. And I don't know who this dog is or what their intentions are going to be. And I know you're not going to like it either. So it's just a perfect example. I'm out for a walk. I see an off leash dog. I kick the ball. She starts running towards the ball, which is directly towards the dog. I recalled her. I downed her. And she's like, what the hell, man? I used compulsion. I didn't use a correction. I never corrected her. I didn't need to. I just used compulsion. She wanted to do it. And I said, no, you can't. You're going to downstay. I reached it. I walked 10 feet ahead. I took off my leash I had with me. And I said, hey, baby, how are you? And the dog started wagging her tail. And I leashed her up. And back to the owner she went. My point by telling that story is my dog wanted to go after the ball, no matter what. And that dog wanted to come after maybe me and my family to say hi, not a malicious way or aggressive way. But I intervened and I used compulsion and I used obedience to say control, right? So my point is those are things that you can do. Is you're like, hey, I know you want the ball, or I know you want to get to Jax, but you can't. It's just not going to happen, period. Like, you got to listen to me. And so I think right now, if you're kind of hitting it head on physically with, I'm going to wrestle you to, you know, into the bed or whatever, it's just going to make things worse. For me, I just stand right where it's happening. Like, a lot of dog owners want to correct and run. And I'm like, well, again, if there's something in front of you that's making your dog react, you should stay in that area so you can help your dog through it. You can coach them through it. Like getting into a cold plunge, like, it sucks. You don't want to be in there. You want to get out. It's painful. Oh, man. But you got to coach. It's like, breathe through your mouth, through your nose, breathe. You're just, somebody's coaching you through the process. And then pretty soon you're sitting there in that cold plunge and you're like, I'm good. I wasn't good, but now I'm good, right? So those are the types of things you should be helping your dog out with too, is to start to navigate through the scenario. The only problem is like you said, if you don't have obedience with, like, you know, really good obedience with another dog, then it's a problem. But that's the way I would be handling it, because if you haven't corrected her properly, effectively, or on time, then that's a great thing, because you haven't really done like the most basic things yet. Like, if we're avoiding or we're physically pushing and pulling, you know, for me, I would just leave it. Correction. She stops barking, growling, lunging at Jax, and you're like, good, leave it. Moving on.
That makes sense. Yeah. How about when you said you could use an e-collar to potentially do it? Would that work if you're the other side of the glass to Zella and you're with Jax?
Yes.
Because often that's what happens, because he sees him getting attention and she's like, no, you're not getting attention.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And especially, like, again, having a dog is discretionary, like, in how you do it. But, you know, put yourself into, like, a situation with kids, too. It's just like, and before I had a son, this is how I would think, because I was a kid once. I had parents. I know you watch human behavior literally all day long. Like, you know what's appropriate and what's not, right? Your waiter's at your table, you're taking an order, and there's a person next to you that's screaming and yelling, stomping on the ground, throwing forks up in the air because they want to do their order first. And you're like, are you real? Like, what is your problem? You got problems, right? So it's the same thing with dogs. Like, you're outside petting one of your other dogs, and then your dog's inside going, I'm going to kill you, you son of a bitch. Wait till I get a hold of you. And you're just like, what the hell? So you just have to think in your head, like, what's appropriate? What's not? And also, okay, screw it. Say, like, well, I don't know if it's appropriate or not. Okay, well, is that healthy? Is it healthy for you to just go out and give your other dog affection and the dog on the other side of the screen wants to kill your dog for it? No, it's a very unhealthy environment. It's very unhealthy for your dog to think like that. And most importantly, like the amount of stress it takes for your dog to think like that and get into that state of mind is also an enabling kind of toxic thing too, because, you know, and we can argue all day about what's right, wrong, or indifferent, but that's one of the main headlines that I tell people all the time when they say like, hey, you know, I heard it was stressful to correct a dog. And I say, hey, that's the point. Correct. Rewarding is to reward, to say, hey, we want that again. Correcting is to say, we do not want that again. And then if we go down the other line of, well, correcting a dog makes the dog stressful. Yep, that's the point. And then B, think about the alternative of allowing your dog to behave like that and how stressful that is long term.
Yeah.
So me correcting my dog once for the shit I don't want to see anymore, and it ends there, versus the dog living a stressful life, reacting to other dogs their whole life and how stressful that is forever, because we don't want to step up and add a correction. So it disables them. It's you know, it's six in one and half a dozen in the other. But really for me is I have found unbelievable success with millions of dog owners all over the world with my courses and my teachings and my videos of, again, your dog is like, I'm going to, again, your perfect example, your dogs are. Zella's on one side saying, I'm going to kill you. And she's building the stress in herself. She's building stress in you and she's building stress in Jack. She could be stressing out your neighbors for all you know. And it's this really like, it's really just not a good vibe, right? And you're like, man. And then you correct her and she's like, holy crap, that sucked. I hated that. That was uncomfortable. And she stopped doing it. And you teach her the next time that she is in that environment that she does good. Yay, good job, all this stuff. She's like, okay, I'm going to behave like this. Like a lot of people, for whatever reason, not a lot, I shouldn't say that. There's more people who understand this concept and agree with it than there are not. But there are some people not only like who disagree with it, but also don't know about it. So for you, those are the things you have to think about too, is how assertive and how effective are your corrections? Is it making it worse? Or is it clear, clean, effective, ethical, like bang? Nope. Get that out of your system. And that's what you got to start focusing on.
Yeah.
Because
that definitely makes sense.
The other thing too is like you could be in your head, and I'm just I'm a dog owner, dog lover first. I became a professional over the years because that's just what I'm good at. Working with dogs is like literally it's so natural and easy for me, right? It's just like I could talk about it all day long, but my point is you got to think too about your state of mind as you're doing this too. Like you have to get into the right state of mind and you have to like really, you got to see results. And I think that right now you're kind of sitting in a bad place because you haven't really seen results. And I think you can make your life easier, but the more control you have and the more clarity you have is the better, because the other on the flip side of this too is this all makes sense and whatever, but if you have really good control and good obedience, this can go much further than what you're dealing with as well. It can go much further.
Yeah. I guess quickly with the, have you got any tips about how to, her escaping?
Well, you know, one thing you said to me, first of all, like, you know, you got to do what you got to do with a dog that is dangerously escaping, meaning if they get out, there can be, you know, massive problems or even death to another dog. So you just have to make sure you have like a good system, like, so a good crate. They make anxiety crates, high anxiety crates, things like that. They make those. I know Impact Crate makes them. I don't know about Australia and what you guys have available, because I know you're out there. But I will be too next month.
There's a lot less stuff, obviously, but you know, and
yes,
there are, you know, just on one of those wire crates at the moment. You know, zip right up and whatever.
Yeah, that's easy for them to get out. So you just have to, again, you have to look at something that's made for a dog like that. But one thing you said earlier is about, I can't remember exactly what it was, but you said something about, I think exercise. I think, but you just have to remember, like, dogs also need that mental exercise and that training. It's something I'm really big on. Like, if you're not putting in the work mentally with a dog, It's going to be really hard for you to, you know, be successful long term. So as far as like decreasing your dog's drives, so whenever I do my out of state program with dog owners and we start working mentally, so like heel, sit, down, stay, leave it, place, like getting the mind to think, the dogs the next day are so like chill and tired because they have never worked that hard in their life.
Yeah, I try to do 10 minutes of obedience every morning with each of them before work, but sometimes I might be feeling off, or they might be, it's just not one of those days where, you know, they're off for whatever reason and they're not, and generally that's the times probably that they probably use that connection, that's probably the time that she sort of wants to go. But I found it sort of goes in waves. She sort of, she gets out and then she wants to get out for the next few weeks just because she finds it all exciting and exhilarating going, and then she forgets about it. Should I be leaving things like bones out or something for her,
You could. I just think I would be like, all your focus should be going on mental stimulation. That's just really what it comes down to. Like, I've never, unless the dog has neurological, genetic anxiety and stuff, like I've never worked with a dog that tried to escape after like good training sessions. You know, they're just telling you information.
So, right? so how long would you? So, if in the same way that no matter what, I'd take him for a walk in the morning, rain, hail, or shine. Do the same set, but the morning walk is, evening walk is often usually more a walk, while the after morning one is more a walk to the park and then a little bit of obedience. Is that what
I'd be pushing I'd be pushing more obedience. I'd be pushing more testing. So whenever you need to work your dog and get your dog exhausted, just test them. Anything you can do to make them think. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, I just put out my reactive to neutral course. And one of the things that we talk about, one of the big things that we talk about in that course is mental stimulation. And when you're talking about mental stimulation with dogs, like, they give you information. Like, if your dog's reactive, they're telling you information. You just have to be experienced enough to know what it is. And so one of the things I talk about is, if your dog is put into a crate or your dog is put into, again, and outside of anxiety and genetics of having separation anxiety and things like that, like if you put your dog into a crate and then they're begging to get out, they're not fulfilled. It's the same thing with us. Like if we eat if my son eats a big meal that I think he's done and he says he wants more, I'm like, he's not lying. Like he wants more. Like he's telling me. You know what I mean? Like it's just like a plant that needs water. Like you water it and you're like, that should be good, and it's still is dry. You're like, okay, it needs more. Like, so I guess my point is, with all these crazy analogies, is you put your dog into a crate after they were worked for 10 minutes and they're scraping to get out, they're not ready. Like they should go in there and plop down and, sleep. So again, outside of, that's a generalized statement outside of, other things, but generally speaking.
So the same sort of thing, thinking of the backyard as just a larger crate, I guess.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. You got to mentally test them. You know what I mean? Like they're just sitting in the backyard. They're probably just staring at the door waiting for you to go out there too, So you just have to like make your dog think a lot in order to decrease that build. It's really important. Like if your dog is telling you information, you put your dog into a crate or whatever, like my dog's the same way. If I go out and I rip the chucket with her and I do OB with her, she's a big physical girl. Like you got to physically get her going. And I think it is mental for her too, because she likes the chase and the prey and the kill of the ball. So it's a little bit of both for her. But again, it depends on the genetics of the dog and what they're bred to do. But when I do that with her and I come back, like she's good. When she's like, hey, I want to go run again, she's bouncing at the door, right? She's telling me, hey, not enough, need more now, right? And sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. But when she does get run and she does get worked, she's on her bed. She's chilling. She's content. She's happy. So I'm not looking at her going like, man, does she want more? Well, yeah, maybe, but she doesn't need more, right? So if you put your dog into a crate and they're immediately, let me out of here. Let me out of here. I'm bored. Let me out of here. That just tells you information. And again, outside of genetics and serious separation anxiety, like your dog's like, this is not enough. Like I am not fulfilled. I need more. And I always used to tell people, happy dogs don't run away. When I say I always used to tell people, I mean by I used to be an animal control or dog control officer. And so part of my job was catching dogs at large, and it would be the same dogs all the time. This dog's gone again. Yep. This dog's gone again. This dog's gone again. And they weren't fulfilled. They weren't happy. They were put in a backyard. They found a way to dig under the fence and escape because they're bored. So, and I tell people all the time to my, you know, at that point, I wasn't a trainer or anything, I don't think, but I just told them, I'm like, they're like, I don't know why it keeps happening. I'm like, happy dogs don't run away. And usually people after hearing that, they're like, oh shit, that cuts deep. I'm like, yeah, it's real though. Like if your dog was content and happy, they wouldn't be running away from you, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, no, I've heard you say that before too. Yeah. And that's what makes me a little bit worried too, is she not happy, you know, as well from a,
you just got to do everything you can in your power to fulfill that itch, man. That's, I mean, like I said, it's hard. I know life can get busy and exhausting and everything. I get it more than the next person, but you just have to find that time. You know, if you're like, okay, my dogs are, you know, that's the first thing I would do is just exercise. Cause I bet her animosity towards the other dog her opinion and a personality and hatred maybe towards the dog might not go away, but her behavior going towards the dog might change. She's sitting in a crate.
If she's tired, she couldn't be asked the energy.
Yep. It's like me after a cup of coffee and somebody asked me a dog question. I'm like, oh, I thought you'd never ask. Sit down, son. We're about to have a conversation. You know what I mean? But if I'm, you know, super tired, 11:30 at night, and somebody's like, hey, what do you think of this? I'm like, I'm not a dog guy. I don't know what you're talking about. So you just got to think like it's not going to change how she may feel about him. But if she's tired, a lot can change. She's like, oh, it's not worth it. I'm not going to chase that cat. You know what I mean? Like so just think about that too. Like that's a big thing. You know,
As obviously obedience training is like a big mental stimulation, but how about like things like some of the toys and things like that? And
it's helpful, like prey pulls, tug toys, that's all good. But you just have to think about how much your dog's thinking. Think about that. That's all you got to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Like if you put your dog in a sit stay and threw the ball 100 times and repped it out, that's more thinking than anything. Like your dog is thinking. You might say sit stay bologna, sit stay biscuit instead of break. You just constantly like test. Your dog goes and gets it. Your dog goes and gets it. You say, dog out, boom, the dog outs it from a distance. Dog down, boom, the dog downs. Dog sit, dog left, dog recalls to you. Dog go in between my legs, dog go to your place. Dog sit, dog down, break, boom. She goes and gets the tug. She comes back, dog out, boom. You're just constantly testing her. And she's thinking. What are you going to do? What's it going next? Where's it going to go? Wah, rah. But you got to think, like, dogs are absolutely savage animals. Like, they can run for miles. And they can do 20 miles a day and not flinch. Easy, you know, and you got to think like, I'm only walking my dog around the block and not doing mental. Like they're not getting what they really need. And that's 90% of dogs, and that's life. But when you start having behavioral problems, that's the first place you got to look.
Yeah.
Because that's the easiest way out. Like, I mean, it's the easiest fundamentally, you know, it may be challenging for you to get up the energy to do it. But if I'm like, hey, man.
I'm guessing the more engaged you are in that, like the more, you know, the more you're really into their training, the more energy they're going, you know, mental stimulation they're going.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to get it out.
Which is probably where, you know, even though I'm spending time with it, like sometimes, you know, my engagement with it's like, I'm doing this because not because I feel like doing it right now, because I'm, Yep. I'm doing it because I, you know.
You have to. Yeah, it's the same way.
That's what I have to, and that's what the dog trainer said to do, you know? Like, yep. You know, so.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's you know, dogs have two engines. They have mental engines and physical engines. And a lot of times people don't even touch that mental engine. Like, it just sits there. And like, you're sitting there like, man, you know, there's so much you can do with it. Like yesterday we went to watch a football game at a friend's house, and I knew we'd be gone for a long time. So I played with Lakota until she couldn't breathe anymore and she was exhausted. Her tongue was hanging, gave her fresh water, turned on the music and left. And I knew, okay, she was out for a good 30 minutes playing, ripping, got her energy out. And when I came home before we went to bed, I did the same thing. Cause I just, you have to monitor these things. You know, it's the same thing with humans, man. That's why I run and do a bunch of shit I don't like to do, because it makes me feel good. In the beginning, it doesn't. Waking up, you know, before everyone else to get on that treadmill is not fun. I hate doing it. But, you know, after I get a good workout in, I'm sweating, I feel great. And it's the same thing with dogs. Like, if they're sitting there depressed and anxious and whiny and la, 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 I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
That's a good way to say it. Like, yeah, it's their gym session before they.
Yeah, man.
For the day. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't tell anybody, like, if you go for a nice run and you actually get a sweat in, you know, 25, 30 minutes, there's no way you're going to come back in the same mood. You're just not. It's just how it goes. So anyway, so same thing with dogs. They're sitting there, two animals living under a house, you know, tensions rising. Okay, screw training. How much exercise? Not that much. Okay. I mean, there's clients I won't even work with because they won't even put in the work, you know, and it's like, you're going to make me look bad. You know, I'm going to give you everything you need to do. But at the end of the day, you know, your dog's your dog. You either can make the decision to make it better or not. That's not my job. My job is to show you what your dog's capable of and what you're capable of. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I guess I'm lucky that it's just me in that, you know, my whole time is, but it's a catch 20, you know, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing too, because, you know, I know that a lot of their problems probably are associated with me, being a bit over affectionate to them, you know?
Yep. You just got to get things straightened out and put it to work.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I'll see you next month.
Yeah. So I'm bringing Zella. So
cool.
Jack's probably is less in need, so he's staying home. But
cool.
Yeah, you get to meet her.
Looking forward to it. It's my birthday weekend, so it'll be fun.
It is.
Yeah.
All righty. Cool.
Cool, man.
I'll see you then.
All right.
See ya. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
I'll let you know how it goes.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. All right, first question comes from Kate Elizabeth 10, 6-year-old German Shepherd. I love the podcast. All the tips are helpful, the way you break down everything. However, I have a 6-year-old German Shepherd. He barks, but once we correct him with the e-collar, prong collar stops. He was attacked as a puppy by an older dog, and ever since he gets tunnel vision whenever our neighbors have their dogs out at the same time. We can't get him to stop unless we grab his collar and walk him inside the house. Any advice on how to get him to break his tunnel vision and pay attention to commands? Yeah, the best thing you should do is just work on your recall. This comes up pretty much every week for me, but throughout my social media platforms is, what about my dog aggressively going after the dog next door? Again, there's nothing anybody can do about that situation. The dog next door is barking. The dog next door is in your yard. The dog next door is on the other side of that wood or that fence. So your dog is naturally going to be protective, maybe pissed, maybe even friendly, and it's annoying, whatever. You have to just work on, again, think about it like this. This is an off-leash scenario. Your dog is off-leash in your yard. What do you want to do? Hey, stop barking. Okay. You could do that, but the other dog on the other side of the fence is still barking at your dog or running around, making your dog go crazy. So you have to work on your recall to break that tunnel vision. So you'd say, dog, come. Your dog would come to you, maybe put him into a downstay and then break. That'll break that tunnel vision. And the other thing is just, you know, currency. Like, what do you, your dog's in your backyard. They have literally nothing else to do. And there's another living, breathing dog on the other side of that fence that is doing all sorts of crazy shit. What do you want your dog to do? Look the other way? Like, you got to be also realistic too. So hope that helps. Next one comes Selena Runkar. Hey, Tom, love your podcast. My question is, if you would recommend using an e-collar for training, do you to leave cats alone? My cattle dog mix loves chasing our cats if they run. If they walk into the room, she will leave them alone or just go up to say hi. She knows the leave it command quite well, but isn't translating to the cat chasing. Wonder if the e-collar could help train her. Yeah, you could. Again, guys, you know, I'm going to keep saying this and 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 saying this. You're not going to be able to change your dog. You're not going to be able to tell your fish not to swim. Okay. Your cattle dog chasing your cat is never going to go away. You can work on obedience. Sure. That's an off-leash advanced obedience, just like we just talked about with the dog in the backyard. Your dog chasing a little furry thing around your house is an advanced level 3 obedience pattern. If you don't have advanced level 3 obedience, your e-collar is going to be worthless. You're wasting your time. You're wasting your money. Work on your obedience. You can introduce the e-collar at the end. That's your polisher. And of course, you can say, hey, leave it and get your dog to stop. Yes, but you're not going to change your dog wanting to chase the cats. So remember that. Next one comes from Juno ML. Hey, Tom, at 4-star review. Incredible podcast. 4-star review. That was a passive-aggressive way to say, hey, maybe you can change it to 5. Anyway, hey, Tom, I had a question about my dog's recent behavior. Lately, it seems that my dog is scared of the dark. That's interesting. I live in a city where some very inconsiderate people will set off fireworks. Okay, even after the 4th of July. We are usually able to eventually calm her down when it happens. However, it's not dark out. So your dog doesn't like the dark because it's associated with fireworks potentially. Now that makes sense. Can we do any... This isn't a confidence thing. One thing I can't ever help with... Couple things. I talk about it almost every podcast. Fireworks and thunder. If your dog absolutely hates fireworks and thunder, there's nobody anybody could ever do about it. The only thing you can do is get away. That's it. It's a very innate thing that your dogs will have. It's like us being like, hey, when it gets super cold and I don't have a coat on, how can I not get cold? You can't. That's what's going to happen, unfortunately. And I'm not trying to be a jerk or anything. I hope it doesn't come off that, but you can't change that, unfortunately. The only thing you can do, if your neighbors are lighting off fireworks, there's no training you can do with your dog. All you can do is get out of there or have a conversation with them. Your dog is going to hate the fireworks every single time. Just like your dog hates the vet because they stick them and poke them with stuff. Just like your dog hates the clippers because you clip your dog's nails too long or too short and it sucks and it hurts them. Blah, 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 blah. I hope this helps. I look forward to answering all of the rest of the questions coming up. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.